This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 15th of January 2016. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 15th of January 2016, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are Silver Hill Scheme Could Be Scrapped, Restaurants Warning, and grieving families call for trust chief to quit. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley.
Silver Hill Scheme Could Be Scrapped. Winchester civic chiefs were poised to hand an ultimatum to the developer behind Silver Hill yesterday. Build it now or we will walk. TH Real Estate, THRE, has asked for more time to deliver the controversial regeneration after breaking promises to start by the new year. But patience is running out at Winchester City Council, where senior councillors are, for the first time, seriously considering ditching the firm and starting again. I want to tell them that it's this scheme, it's now, or really we have to protect the interests of Winchester, said Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of the council. In a letter to Councillor Godfrey, published on Monday, THRE boss Mike Sales claimed the £150 million plans must be changed again to meet building standards. He proposed scrapping the bus station for the second time, providing an amount of on-site affordable housing and reducing parking in the block replacing Friars Gate car park. Mr. Sales also raised the prospect of legal action against the council if it terminates their partnership, something civic officers believe is unlikely, according to a new report. Cabinet was due to agree a way forward at a meeting yesterday, as the Chronicle went to press yesterday. Councillor Godfrey was set to propose writing a letter outlining the council's position. He said on Tuesday, "What they're asking will take another 3 to 4 years to get back to where we are now. I would like to move forward with the current scheme, if at all possible. And if not, then we've got to find a quicker way, a better way to develop the area as soon as possible." THRE sparked outrage in 2014 by trying to drop a bus station and all 100 affordable homes from the project. The move was overturned by the High Court last year after a legal challenge by rebel councillor Kim Gottlieb, but THRE will appeal the decision in May. Mr. Sales has asked the council to extend their contract until 9 months after the results of the case, giving them time to bring forward a scheme of acceptable quality. But council officers believe this would delay the start of work until as late as 2020. In a report published for yesterday's meeting, corporate director Steve Tilbury and head of legal Howard Bone said scrapping the contract might be the better long-term solution. Councillor Gottlieb, leader of the Winchester Deserves Better campaign, has long lobbied the council to terminate the contract and start again. He said, "The council is moving in the right direction under its own steam, even if in a slow, begrudging way. They've had the best part of 5 years to sort this out. There are intrinsic problems with the project itself, which is what's really held it up. Frankly, if they were to respond to Councillor Godfrey's letter and say, all right, we'll get on with it, then I'm not sure how much credence that has. For them to change position again would seem implausible. A recommendation from yesterday's cabinet will be referred to a special council summit on January 28th before a final decision is taken by cabinet on February the 10th.
And it's over to Noel for the second headline story.
Yeah, second headline is restaurants warning. Winchester's burgeoning restaurant trade is reaching saturation point and damaging the hospitality sector, leader of the city's business lobby has said. Independent caterers and hotels fear that an influx of national chains is eating into their trade and leaving them unable to compete with promotional discounts. Catherine Turness, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, fears some companies could fold. She said, "The hospitality sector has done relatively well out of Christmas, which is great, but I'm worried that we will see a couple of them close because I think we're reaching a saturation point for restaurants." The BID, which represents nearly 800 businesses, is lobbying the City Council to protect shop numbers in central streets such as the Square, Jury Street, Upper High Street and Parchment Street. A similar scheme is already in place in the High Street. Restaurants to open in the city centre in 2015 included Cote Brasserie, Palm Pan Asia, Wagamama, The Stable and Shanghai Papa. Another is earmarked to replace Tony and Guy in Jury Street this year. "We're really supportive and trying to protect our independence because that's what we worry about," Ms. Turness has said. "It comes to managing that success. 18 months ago, we didn't have that problem. Then all of a sudden, Rick Stein's here, Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall's here, and off the back of that, we've got great PR campaigns." Meanwhile, traders have won the ear of senior council officers in their fight to cut the number of stalls in the High Street. Ms. Turness said Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of the City Council, is involved in discussions about limiting market days or moving them off the main route through town. As reported by the Chronicle over the last month, retailers have grown frustrated by the increase in markets and tourist footfall, claiming locals are being pushed out by crowds and the lack of parking. Ms. Turness said, "Position it correctly and it can be an asset, but position it incorrectly and it's a liability, and the High Street, at Christmas especially, needs breathing space." She added, "Christmas has grown, but with that the infrastructure hasn't grown. We can't cope with the amount of people in the city." The BID has this week urged the council to avoid cutting the number of parking spaces for shoppers, particularly Upper Brook Street car park, which is set to be built on for the new GP surgery. In a statement on Tuesday, a spokesman said, "The current infrastructure cannot cope with the number of visitors at Christmas, and this has resulted in clients cancelling visits to retailers and service businesses because they were unable to access the city with ease, if at all. It has also resulted in the withdrawal of a commercial sale in Parchment Street." Ms. Turness said plans were discussed in 2014 with the then leader Rob Humby. Progress slowed when he resigned over Silver Hill. And there's a photograph of the centre of the High Street with lots of shoppers all crowding around.
Heather, let's have the third and final headline story, please.
And this is about grieving families calling for the trust chief to quit. The brother of a teenager who died while in the care of controversial Hampshire Health Trust led demands for the organisation's leaders to resign. Teenager Tom Ryan choked back tears as he branded Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust Chief Executive Katrina Percy as outrageous in the wake of a scathing inquiry criticising the organisation for failing to investigate the deaths of hundreds of people in its care. The 16-year-old was among furious relatives at an emotional board meeting at the Trust headquarters in Tatchbury Mount on Monday, which was held following the release of a controversial report after the death of his brother, Connor Sparrowhawk. Ms. Percy apologised but still refused demands to resign, saying lessons have been learned. It comes as she revealed that the Care Quality Commission will launch unannounced... I'm sorry, I'll read that again. It comes, as she revealed, the Care Quality Commission, CQC, will launch unannounced inspections at the Trust in the coming weeks. The Trust has faced condemnation in the wake of a report criticising it for serious failings. The report, commissioned by NHS England, looked into all deaths at the Trust between April 2011 and March 2015. It showed that of the 10,306 deaths, 722 were categorised as unexpected, and of those, only 272 were investigated. Relatives crowded into the public gallery with an installation featuring 337 gingerbread men, representing those who died, and there's a small picture of four people behind a sheet covered with brightly coloured gingerbread men, one gingerbread man for each person who has died. Mr. Ryan's voice shook as he told Miss Percy, "It's outrageous you haven't properly apologised to our family." Miss Percy said, "We are incredibly sorry over the actions and care that allowed Connor to die." But among heckling calls for her resignation, Chairman Mike Petter said, "No one will step down," adding, "We have put together an action plan." There's a photograph of those two people, the Trust Chairman and the Chief Executive, at the emergency board meeting, sitting at their table looking at the gathered grievers. Chief Operating Officer Dr. Chris Gordon said the action plan had been delayed by teething problems, while board members pointed out the draft contained spelling mistakes. Afterwards, Connor's mother, Sarah Ryan, branded the Trust as a shambles. Richard West from Parkgate, whose son David died, aged 28, said, "It is difficult to move forward when you've still got the same people there. They should stand down."
And that concludes our headline stories. We'll go on now to death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, Belgarum diary and editorial comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Baker. Pauline Diane Baker died peacefully, St Cross Grange care home, age 76. Barnard, David Morris Barnard, suddenly aged 73. De Felice, Anthony Philip James Tony De Felice, peacefully. Jones, Hazel Molly Jones of Charlbury, peacefully aged 92. King, Stanley Victor King, peacefully in Winchester, aged 87. Mundy, Edward James Mundy at Southampton General Hospital. Buckingham, Charles Charlie Buckingham, peacefully at Flowerdome Care Home, aged 93. Freckleton, Stan Freckleton, peacefully aged 85. King, Violet Rosemary Vio King, at Devonish House Nursing Home, aged 85. Pitt, Pamela Pitt, who used to be Mayoress of Winchester, 1980 to 81, peacefully at Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 97. Roberts, Margaret Roberts, formerly of South Wanston, aged 94. Spiller, Linda Olivia Spiller, peacefully. Thomas, Dorry Thomas, Queen Alexandra Hospital, aged 92. Wilkinson, Anna Ducey Wilkinson, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 82. Willis, Paul Nicholas Willis, who died peacefully in his sleep, I don't know when. Wichard, Jim Wichard, unexpectedly at Parkham, Devon, aged 79. And now we'll go on to Christian comment, read by Shirley.
And this is headed, "The Everlasting Power of Trees," and it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. On Sunday, French President François Hollande led thousands of people in a memorial service for the victims of the attacks on satirical newspaper Charlie Hebdo and a Jewish supermarket in Paris a year ago. President Hollande unveiled a plaque next to an oak tree planted in the square that has become the meeting place for those wanting to show solidarity and defiance against the jihadist terrorist atrocities. It has become a tradition once again to plant a tree, something living, to remember the dead. It is a way of emphasizing life rather than death, and says that life goes on. A tree, as a man, is a vertical figure projected toward heaven. It is a symbol because of its vital strength, annually renewed during the cycle of the seasons, reminding us of the victory of life over death. Because of this, trees have had a deep religious meaning. For ancient people, it represented the divinity, and its shadow was a gift from the gods. In ancient times, people once worshipped the sacred forests, located on the high part of the mountains. Trees symbolized fertility because of the fact that they reproduced every year through the falling of leaves and the sprouting anew, the cycle of death and resurrection. The tree of life is an important symbol in nearly every culture. With its branches reaching into the sky and roots deep in the earth, it dwells in three worlds, a link between heaven, the earth, and the underworld, uniting above and below. It is both a feminine symbol, bearing sustenance, and a masculine, visibly phallic symbol, another union. In Jewish and Christian mythology, a tree sits at the center of both the heavenly and earthly Edens. The tree has other characteristics which lend easily to symbolism. Many trees take on the appearance of death in the winter, losing their leaves, only to sprout new growth with the return of spring. This aspect makes the tree a symbol of resurrection, and a stylized tree is the symbol of many resurrected gods. Jesus, Attis, and Osiris all have crosses as their symbols. Most of these gods are believed to have been crucified on trees as well. The modern Christmas tree harkens back to trees decorated to honour Attis, the crucified god of the Greeks. A tree also bears seeds or fruits which contain the essence of the tree, and this continuous regeneration is a potent symbol of immortality. It is the fruit of a tree that confers immortality in the Jewish creation story. Similar ideas exist in other traditions. Life goes on.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you want to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the good old pigeon post is editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 11 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Paul.
Yes, in the first letter, the starting point for it is a wonderful photograph of a row of recycling tubs outside Tesco, absolutely jam-packed with bottles, and then thousands of bottles standing alongside it. And the letter comes from Susan Moreau, and the headline is, "More Nights In, It Seems." And that picture is going to be referred to later, you'll see. "Sir, what a lot of empty bottles. Chronicle, page 1, January the 7th. Let's hope they were emptied with fun and merriment. A good thing to see. The people of Winchester are recycling. Apparently, there were over 1,000 bottles. Surely not a huge amount per adult with the parties and socialising of the festive period. Then on page 15, we read the fact that approximately 30 pubs a week are closing. And maybe there is our answer. Staying in is the new going out. Pubs have changed enormously from my first experiences of using pubs. You don't find many drinkers' pubs anymore. So many pubs are becoming more like restaurants, encouraging families. The smoking ban and drink driving laws have led many people to stay away from the pubs and socialise at home more. I'm one of these people. I still visit pubs, but not as often as I used to. Hence, more empty bottles at the recycling bank from my home. A sign of our times. Susan Moreau, Mountbatten Place, Kingsworthy.
This letter from Richard J. Kidd is headed Support the Freedom of Information Act. Sir, as a result of an FOI request, Winchester City Council has revealed that in the years listed below, it paid out the following amounts to outside planning consultants. In 2011, £47,565.86. In 2012, £29,831.19. In 2013, £34,807.83. And in 2014, £56,020.55. Between September 2014 and September 2015, £111,841.34 was paid out in staff overtime. £8,371 was paid out to an employee regarding a cut to a leg caused by a waste bin. I would urge that readers write to their Member of Parliament asking that the Freedom of Information Act be strengthened and not, as is currently proposed, weakened. Winchester City Council, to its credit, has always been prompt in replying to my requests. Unlike Test Valley Borough Council, whose leader Ian Carr has promised me in writing that it needs to improve on its response. Richard J. Kidd, Dane Geldclose, Andover.
And this one is from Councillor Liz Hutchinson, entitled Challenging Plan. Sir, like Elizabeth Proudman, Chronicle Letters, January 7th, I too admire many of Allies and Morrison's architectural schemes. They are an excellent practice with a deservedly proud record, but not all schemes designed by well-known and respected architects are necessarily good, and the proposals for Silver Hill are not good enough. A well-known name is no guarantee of a good scheme. What makes for a good scheme is the combination of a good design team, sensitive to the local context, a brief reflecting local needs and character, and an excellent client who has the time and expertise to work effectively with the design team. I have no doubt that Allies and Morrison could have designed a good master plan for the Silver Hill area with some excellent buildings. And it is not just the buildings that make an area such as Silver Hill, or indeed the station approach area, successful. It's a way in which they interact with their surroundings, the streets, other buildings and public spaces, trees and planting. How together they contribute to lively, attractive and safe places for people. This is the challenge. It is more than architecture and buildings, which is why overall planning and design are so essential. Councillor Liz Hutchinson, Clifton Road, Winchester.
Here's an unusually powerful and well-written letter, Faults of the Past. Sir, a few weeks ago, in your ever-interesting Chronicles of the Past, you reported from 1815 that a carrier conveying a poor woman from London to her home parish in Winton had stopped for refreshment, only to find, when looking at the woman, that she was stone dead. She was doubtless a victim of the punitive poor laws that insisted that anyone seeking charity could be driven out of their place of abode and forced to return to the parish of their birth that was held to be responsible for them. These laws, dating from 1601, were changed but scarcely improved in 1834, when the workhouses, such as St Paul's in Winchester, were built and operated under the rule of least eligibility. This meant that conditions inside the workhouse had to be less desirable than those outside, so only those with absolutely no other option would be housed. St Paul's, of course, is now smart housing. We have a welfare state, pensions and the rest, and we feel proud of how our civilization has advanced. Then I read, Chronicle, January the 7th, GP site closed up, that the redundant, empty, due-to-be-demolished Friarsgate site has been boarded up by the police because people were sleeping in it. The top of Friarsgate car park was similarly closed some years ago, well before the car park itself was closed. The night shelter has already tightened its qualifications, requiring people to have a local connection. Winchester is a rich city, in a rich county, in a rich country. Are we any more civilised than our unenlightened forebears? Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Phil Gagg writes about trading changes. Sir, in the spirit of seasonal goodwill, I am sorry to hear Jeremy France feels left out of the pre-Christmas bonanza, as reported in the Chronicle December the 31st. The last time we heard from him, his business was thriving following the relocation to the pedestrianised part of High Street, so his recent problems must be quite a shock for him. Also, in the spirit of seasonal goodwill, may I wish all the hard-working traders in the Winchester street markets and in the Cathedral Market a most profitable new year. I find it difficult to understand why around 20 businesses are blaming the markets for their drop in trade. There could be many other reasons. Changes in taste, poor marketing, warm weather, cuts in renewable energy subsidy, the internet, the price of oil, etc., etc. It seems premature for them to apportion blame. And for Mr. France to accuse market stalls of taking his money, perhaps the markets are experiencing a drop in business too and are not guilty. Even more puzzling is the emerging distinction between the right kind of shopper and the wrong kind of shopper. Traders do not want the town filled with people if they are not right for the businesses who are here. Traders usually claim to try to meet the needs of their customers, not demand that customers meet their needs. Rents from the street markets help balance the council's books, and rents from the cathedral market help repair the cathedral roof, so they seem to me highly deserving of my business. Meanwhile, I am trying my best to develop a taste for Mr. France's jewellery, but to no avail. One final puzzle. Independent traders say the streets are too crowded and that there is a lack of parking. Now, how do they suggest the council prevent additional parking leading to even more crowding and to even more of the wrong kind of shopper? Will traders pay for the additional pollution, the health problems and extra carbon footprint it will cause? Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And this one is from Hugh Thomas, headed News Local Talent. Sir, the City Council is to be congratulated on its decision to invite architects to compete for the development of the station approach. It has clearly learned some of the lessons of recent mistakes, but sadly, only some of the lessons. The result of a competition is only as good as the judges making the decision. Firstly, therefore, who appointed the judges? Secondly, why are there so many councillors but so few architects on the panel? Thirdly, why are supporters of the discredited Silver Hill project, such as the Winchester City Trust and a number of councillors and council officers, part of the process? A consortium of acclaimed local architects, a mix of varied architectural talents, made a bid for the site. It was dismissed out of hand. These are professional local people who have already contributed greatly to the admired fabric of the city, and who should have, without a doubt, been given the courtesy of going through to the next stage of this development process. Although one local practice is still under consideration, it does not explain why the consortium was so summarily dismissed. My suspicion is that the judges have assumed local architects are unable to deliver the so-called fashionable plans recently produced for Silver Hill, which are now so out of date. It appears that, yet again, Winchester City Council has allowed itself to be dangerously dazzled by the big, globally known architectural names of London, rather than consulting those of award-winning architects sitting on their very own doorstep. The reality is that these very large national practices have teams of people working on competitions all day long. When they win, it's not Sir Christopher Wren who is the eventual architect, but the young and unknown Mr. Awfully Fashionable who'll pump out the house style. Now, can we go back to the drawing board? Hugh Thomas, RIBA, Southgate Street, Winchester.
And this letter's headed Rethink Festivities. Sir, I was interested to read in the excellent From the Files page of your newspaper that 50 years ago, the festive trade was bigger, better and busier than last year's, according to Winchester's shopkeepers of the time. Apparently, Sheriff and Ward Limited, taken over with many other department stores by Debenhams in the 1970s, reported that the response had been excellent and estimated that more than 6,000 children would have passed through their grotto to see Father Christmas by Christmas Eve, and a scheme to have a photographer on hand to picture every child's happy moment was well received. More magical, surely, than queuing in Winchester High Street to board a Coca-Cola Christmas truck. Perhaps there could be a rethink next year. Geraldine Guthrie, and she doesn't put an address.
Adam Clark Williams wants them to build elsewhere. Sir, as a neighbour of Peter Simmons, I was interested to read what the City of Winchester Trust thought of the new arts complex the college wants to build, as reported in the Chronicle January the 7th. What matters to us is not the design. It's the idea of building it all on open land so close to our homes in Cranworth and Hatherley Roads. You quote Michael Carden of the Trust as saying the proposed siting of the complex is unfortunate. Local residents would agree. Putting up a three-storey building on what has been open land for decades, just across the road from our homes, is indeed unfortunate for us. We certainly believe the college could and should find somewhere else to build. Adam Clark Williams, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this one is headed Hunt for Andrew. And it's written by Teresa Jane Cairns. Sir, I'm looking for a man who was born in Winchester Hospital at approximately 7:30 a.m. on October 13th, 1964. 10 days later, he was transferred to Southampton to what I think was some sort of social services department in Winchester Road, Southampton. His name was Andrew Budd. He was then adopted. I have family members that would love to find him. This man would be my cousin, and my aunt would be his mum. My email is teresacairns@outlook.com. I'll repeat that, teresacairns@outlook.com. And that's from Teresa Jane Cairns, Upshire Berry Green, Upshire, Essex.
And Eve Young says, we need parking. Sir, with Chesil Street car park being reinvented as old people's homes, does that mean you could make up for the sadly reduced car park space in Winchester by rebuilding the old multi-storey car park opposite St Clement's Surgery Clinic? Car park space is much needed in Winchester. What is it planned for, anyway? And when will that materialise? Eve Young, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Last of all, Jill Collymore writes, "Move the market." Sir, Elizabeth is right in her letter to the Chronicle on January the 7th, asking us to confine the Christmas market to the inner close and leave the west end of the Cathedral and War Memorial clear and free of clutter. Jill Collymore, Cannon Street, Winchester.
Yes, indeed, that is the end of our letters for today, and thank you very much for all of our contributors. And we're now going on to your say. Yes. And all the people were asked, is it a waste of government time and money to debate the block Donald Trump from entering the UK petition? Noel has the answers.
Well, no, these people have the answer to actually, yes. Nigel Brown, 84, retired of Winnall Manor Road, Winnall, said, "It's very strange. Why are they wasting their time with this clearly stupid debate? It just annoys me that they're going to do it." And Jacqueline Poulter, 78, retired of Meadow Way Badger Farm, said, "I don't pay all that tax for them to debate this. There are much more important things to debate other than this." And Roisin McNamara, 39, shop worker of Waverway, Stanmore, said, "Oh, I can understand why they're debating it. I signed the petition myself. The guy's just such a monster. He shouldn't be allowed here." And Maria Johnson, 45, pharmacist of Port Lane, Winchester, said, "This is not what I pay my tax for. If they do ban him, if they do ban him, who will they ban next?" Sorry, that's a misprint. Not me. "It worries me that free speech could be impacted. Not that I condone what he says." That's, well, yes.
Yes, thank you.
The peepster are on the spot, yes. As usual.
And now we're going back through the mists of time, through our dusty old files, for the historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, and over to you, Shirley.
Right. 25 years ago, January 11th, 1991. Two sections to this. The Mayor of Winchester cast the deciding vote in the battle over council house rent increases at the full council meeting of Winchester City Council on Wednesday night, as members' absence created a tied vote between Conservatives and the Labour Liberal Democrat Alliance. The Mayor, Mrs. Pamela Pesket, voted in favour of the Housing Committee proposal for an increase of 10.7% or £3 per week. With her support, the amendment, which was passed at the Policy and Resources Committee, calling for an increase of only £2.70 per week and a cut of £200,000 from the repairs and maintenance budget, fell by 27 votes to 26. And the next section, and it's headed Ropley Death Trap. The A31 at Ropley has been labelled a death trap by local residents who have sent a petition signed by 475 people to the County Council and police, demanding urgent improvements to the road. The petition was instigated following the death in November of 85-year-old Frederick Holder of Hobbs Close, Bishop Sutton. He was hit by a car as he crossed over the A31 from the bus stop to the Anchor Inn side and was killed instantly. The petition states that the road is a major hazard for the young and certainly a death trap for the elderly.
Let's go back to 50 years ago. Over to you, Noel.
January the 15th, 1966, two items. One headed Cadet School Idea. Hampshire may have a residential training school for police cadets, possibly sharing it with cadets from other forces. The Chief Constable, Mr. D. Osmond, told Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Police Authority at Winchester on Monday that he is to see whether there are any suitable premises available. The meeting had considered his précis of the report on the cadet system of a Home Office working party of which he had been a member. Realising the benefits obtained by other employments before joining the police, the working party had come to the conclusion that the proportion of ex-cadets in a force should not exceed half the number of serving members. And the second piece is headed Raging Inferno. A prompt turnout by Alsford firemen stopped fire spreading among parked vehicles in a dairy in the town on Sunday evening. The unit, under leading fireman A. Sherwood, arrived at Deadman's Dairy in the Dean to find what appeared to be a raging inferno inside the locked doors of a garage housing two loaded milk lorries and several milk floats. The local part-time fireman forced an entry and quickly dealt with a blazing, electrically driven milk float and pushed it clear of the building. The timber framework of the garage was also well alight, but the fireman contained the blaze.
And Heather is going to take us even further back.
100 years ago, to January the 15th, 1916. Mesopotamia latest. Winchester and the war. Possibly the war news most eagerly awaited in Winchester at the present moment is that which will bring the full details of the severe fighting in Mesopotamia. And when the cloud of anxiety is lifted, let us hope that many hearts will be lightened. The most talked of topic in the city has been perhaps the lighting regulations, which came into force on Monday. The municipal authorities certainly showed an example. Something like two-thirds of the public lamps have been extinguished, and the rest are reduced to about four-fifths of the lighting they formerly gave. Refugees in city. Christmas and the New Year were spent very happily by the Belgian refugees at their homes in Southgate Street. Thanks to the kind forethought of friends and sympathisers, they were able to indulge in good old English fare in the form of turkeys, Christmas puddings, mince pies and cakes, etc., while the children had their full share of enjoyment. With the assistance of Monsieur Ertig, the children, who now begin to understand and speak English, had prepared a very interesting programme with which they entertained their parents and friends on Christmas Day.
And finally, 200 years ago, over to you, Shirley.
Yes, 200 years ago, January 15th, 1816, in two sections, this one. Floods up north. Much damage has been done by floods over the whole of the north of England and south of Scotland. The rivers Caldew, Eden, Peterill, Lyne, Irthing, etc., have overflown or burst their banks. Two or three benighted travellers have lost their lives. Some cattle have been swept away and drowned. Whole districts inundated, and in many places the inhabitants of houses near the waters compelled to save themselves by taking refuge in the upper apartments, while those below were completely flooded. Illegal restraint. Five members of a committee of cloth dressers in Leeds were convicted last week of combining illegally to prevent a fellow workman from following his trade until he had paid £5 to them for permission to work as a punishment for having been employed in Ireland on a species of machinery called gig mills, to the use of which the committee objects. The persecuted man, having given information to the magistrates, all the members of the committee with their books and papers were taken into custody, and an extensive correspondence and combination have been discovered.
And we're back to the present with a bump, and it's over to you, Noel, because you've got something by Khaled Aziz, I believe.
Yes, it's called Come the Resolution. I think he's got it in for women this time. With memories of the Christmas and New Year festivities receding at the speed of light, this is about the time when any New Year resolutions start falling by the wayside. Interesting that 2016 New Year resolutions have become institutionalised, with even the government getting in on the act, launching campaigns on alcohol, smoking, and that newest scourge of society, sugar. Nanny Knows Best Chief Medical Officer Dame Sally Davis is keen to redraw the so-called safe limits on alcohol consumption, reducing the daily recommended maximum intake for men to that of women and promoting AFDs, alcohol-free days. Someone ought to tell the people of Winchester if the photo on the page to the left is anything to go by. That's the photograph that I described when I was reading the letters. I have been attempting to moderate my alcoholic intake for some time with varying degrees of success, finding that an alcohol-free day is in many ways easier to keep than just taking the odd glass. Not sure why suddenly the men's limit now equates to that of women, as there are clear differences in female tolerance to drink, as can be seen on the streets of any of our major towns and cities on any Saturday night. Fortunately, smoking has been one vice I have pretty well avoided. Despite having been brought up in a household of chain smokers, cigarettes have never held any allure. Granted, in my pimply youth, I toyed with a pipe for a few months, becoming hooked on the smell of Balkan Sobrani as you took the top off the tin, but hating the acrid taste when you eventually managed to get the pipe to light. I persevered, largely in a misjudged bid, to look sophisticated beyond my callow years, only to give up having tired of the dismal taste and the growing ownership of shirts and trousers with mysterious burn holes. I used to take the odd cigar on special occasions, loving the ritual of rolling the cigar. Why is the vision of some Cuban lovely using her thigh to complete the cigar wrapping process indelibly fixed in most men's minds, even if they've never smoked? And listening to the band. I love the smell of cigar smoke too, but as with all pleasures, there is always a price to be paid. The next morning I would awake with a throat that felt as if someone had driven a coach bolt through it. I haven't touched a cigar for over a decade. So, on to sugar. I am smugly ahead of the game. I don't take sugar in tea or coffee. On the rare occasions I drink a fizzy drink, I always plump for the diet version, and increasingly prefer water anyway. I try not to eat processed foods, but do like real ice cream from time to time, and have been known to have the odd bit of chocolate. While we're on the subject, our predominantly female office runs on chocolate, and from time to time I take the odd large block or two in the hope the gesture will put me a few rungs higher in the Boss for Beatification league table. Certainly my colleagues give me that impression, but perhaps that's only because they want me to repeat the exercise at regular intervals. So, how does all this relate to New Year's resolutions? I've been a resolute maker of resolutions for decades, but this year I tried something different. Why? Because I couldn't take the self-loathing that comes at this time as I fall off the wagon or backslide. So I decided to start my resolutions before Christmas. Mostly they relate to food and drink, as what really drives me is a real desire to shed a serious amount of weight in 2016. So far it seems to be working. Half a stone gone at the start of the new year. I'm not dieting as such. Been there, done that. It really doesn't fit my lifestyle. But I'm seriously watching what I eat and when. I shall report back regularly, or perhaps not if I don't make it. No point in beating yourself up in public. And there's always 2017.
And now, Heather is going to read an alternative look at the news because it's Belgarum Diary.
And there are four items this week. Radio 1's Annie Max Blissfield's tweet, or not. Much excitement over Blissfield Festival's lineup announcement on Monday. Local music fans have been celebrating the announcement of Dizzy Rascal and Everything Everything. Social media went wild. Among them was one Annie Mack, who tweeted, "Bliss lineup is a blessing." When it was retweeted by the festival, you would have been forgiven for thinking the praise came from the Radio 1 DJ, Annie Mack. But sadly, it came from a 17-year-old namesake at Peter Simmons College. No sweet talking from Chief. This senior councillor may have fired a shot too many in his war against sugary drinks. Councillor Frank Pearson has been in the Chronicle recently for opposing the Coca-Cola Christmas Trucks promotion of unhealthy habits. But the City Council Health Chief looked to have gone a step too far last week as he awkwardly turned on his Conservative colleagues. During a debate on recycling collection and the New Year booze festival, Councillor Pearson said, "There's a high sugar content to alcohol, which makes you wonder what that's doing to diet. Perhaps that is why a number of cabinet members have got substantial girths." The chamber fizzed with laughter. There were awkward looks across the cabinet table and a few sharp intakes of breath. "Speak for yourself," said Victoria Weston, the deputy leader. Recovering the situation, Councillor Pearson said, "It would seem that in my years of being on the council, I consider people who've been up on this bench over the years, it seems to be a qualification of being a member of the cabinet." Ouch. Time will tell over the impact of the Hunts plan. So another big student development in Winchester in the offing, with the student blocks destined for the Hunts site. David Rothery, planning officer, said that the new flats will not be able to accommodate anybody other than students, and this will see other houses being freed for non-students to live in. More housing for the local community? Time will tell. A Chinese delegation is impressed with city IT. There may be 1.4 billion people in China, but when it comes to local government technology, it appears Winchester has the experts. A delegation was on a fact-finding mission last week to discover the secrets behind the city's civic computers. Belgarum is pleased that Chinese impressions of the city have improved since 2014, when former council leader Rob Humby told the Chronicle that a similar group was displeased by the state of our bus station. With Silver Hill meandering onwards, perhaps we will enjoy the station for a while longer.
Over to you, Shirley, for the editorial comment.
And it's headed, "A Chance for Fresh Start at Silver Hill." Silver Hill should be the beating heart of Winchester, an area which gives locals and visitors another reason to enjoy this great city. Instead, it continues to decay, with a doctor's surgery and major car park among the public facilities hurt by years of legal dispute, questionable decisions and bad luck. It appears figures at the top of Winchester City Council are talking more seriously than ever about abandoning TH Real Estate, their development partner for the past 5 years. Perhaps they hope that calling the developers bluff will focus their minds and get the scheme secured before a final decision to terminate needs to be taken. Perhaps solicitor Claire Lloyd-Jones, who has handed a draft of her long-awaited Silver Hill report to council bosses, will criticise their approach so heavily that a fresh start is the only politically viable option. Either way, it is likely that the area will rot further before anything is done, and Winchester will change in that time. We report this week that the restaurant boom is squeezing other parts of the economy. This is not the same city as when Silver Hill was drawn up, especially not for shopping. If starting again gives the council fresh eyes, then that opportunity must be seized quickly.
Now, there are no announcements for this week, but I've got the what's on for the week beginning Monday the 25th of January. First of all, it's Winchester Cathedral. On Tuesday the 26th, between 6:30 to 8:30 in the evening, there's an open evening to see how the cathedral works. On Wednesday the 27th of January at 7:30 p.m, there's Space for Peace concert. School and community choirs will perform in various parts of the cathedral. It's free entry, but donations are suggested. And the seats in the nave have been removed, but there will be chairs if needed. And on Saturday, the 30th of January at 7 p.m., there's a chairman's concert. There's a celebration of peace and a special mention of World War One. There are concessionary tickets of £5. And for all of these, you can book on 01962 857 275. And now there's an announcement for Level 10 Church in Stanmore Lane. It's called Finding Your Feet, and it's Action for Blind People. It's a free two-day programme of workshops and discussions offering practical and emotional support to people adjusting to sight loss. And this is from 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. both days. Places need to be booked now, and I'm afraid I don't have the dates for this, but I do have a telephone number for advice and information and need to book the place. And that's 01722 345 440. That's 01722 345 440. And finally, Open Sight, Hampshire's principal organisation for visually impaired people, is always available for help and advice on 023 8064 1244. 023 8064 1244. Lighting time ends on Friday the 15th of January at 8:03 a.m. and it begins at 4:25 p.m. On Wednesday the 20th of January, it ends at 7:58 a.m. and begins at 4:34 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And we'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, and this is an article which gives the background to the editorial comment about Silver Hill. It says, Silver Hill, what now? And in the article, Duncan Geddes examines the background to the ever-controversial scheme to redevelop part of Winchester city centre. Silver Hill is a tale of false dawns, apocalyptic predictions and complex lore, which has tripped the scheme up at every turn. But this week could be one of the biggest junctures in its history, as the City Council looks seriously at ditching its development partner and starting anew, some 20 years after the scheme was first suggested. TH Real Estate, THRE, then known as Henderson Global Investors, took over the project in 2010 after the collapse of previous developer Thornfield. The plans from that time, including 287 homes, 95,000 square feet of shops, a new car park and a bus station, are the same which the council is insisting go ahead now. But company chiefs now claim the scheme will fail to meet building standards and must be changed, again dropping the bus station as well as cutting parking. And 100 affordable flats would be swapped for an undefined amount of on-site affordable housing. In a letter to council leader Stephen Godfrey, Mike Sales, head of TH Real Estate, claimed the bus station had to go because Stagecoach will not operate such a facility. However, the bus company has reiterated that it might run the station if necessary. Our preference would be for the development to include on-street bus facilities, a spokesman told the Chronicle. However, if the only way for the development to progress is through the inclusion of a bus station, we have said we would consider managing the facility, provided an appropriate commercial agreement was in place. THRE's first changes, accepted by the council in 2014, sparked public outrage and a High Court challenge from rebel Tory councillor Kim Gottlieb, who saw the move quashed on the grounds that they were unlawfully kept from commercial tender. Mr. Sales said the judgment left the scheme incapable of construction to even meet current statutory building standards without severe compromise to the quality and value of the product, if it was possible to achieve. It's the first time the development has warned publicly about building standards since the judgment was handed down almost a year ago. And Councillor Godfrey said that while the company raised concerns on the issue last month, it had always indicated construction would start before the new year. Ditching THRE and starting again would take longer and deliver worse terms for the council. But maybe the better long-term solution, according to a new report by Corporate Director Steve Tilbury and Head of Legal Howard Bone, it would enable a re-evaluation of the area and legally compliant process to secure redevelopment, they said. That will excite some backbench councillors who feel the design is out of date, but others fear the city will be left behind as a shopping destination if the centre is not revamped as soon as possible. A compulsory purchase order on the land expires in March, but city officers now expect to avoid an expensive reapplication by serving notice to implement it. But looming is the prospect of legal action if it terminates its contract with THRE. The Pension Investment Fund claims it has spent £10 million on the scheme to date, and Mr. Sales said walking away before the appeal would breach the council's obligation to act in good faith. Civic officers say being sued is unlikely. The council's Lib Dem opposition have called for a fresh start. Group councillor Lucille Thompson said the scheme had become completely unworkable. She said, "I think there's a real possibility of it collapsing entirely. We think the time has come that actually we need to really redraw lots on this and give the council a bit of breathing space to allow them to come back with a scheme that will actually benefit Winchester and would be fit for the 21st century. THRE has yet to sign vital deals with its financial underwriter and the Housing Association, which would operate the flats. Mr. Sales said the groups involved remain committed to the scheme and blamed the delay on Councillor Gottlieb, who he accused of using privileged information to usurp the scheme and destabilise its deal with the funding partner. Councillor Gottlieb declined to comment. Mr. Sales, closing his letter, said, "Despite the challenging circumstances we both find ourselves in, I believe in investing in the long-term success of the city. Whilst we have tried our investors' patience, I am sure that there is a solution which matches their requirement today and the long-term aspirations of the vast majority of the people of Winchester."
There's another planning issue being raised in this week's Hampshire Chronicle, headed Block Decision, with a picture of the Casson block in St George's Street in Winchester, which is that long horizontal block of grey stone with heavy horizontal lines. So though it's three stories high, the stress is all on the horizontal and it unifies a lot of shops and other things. Improvements to a prominent Winchester office block are set to be decided soon. The City Council is considering how to improve the Casson block, the 1960s building on St George's Street that incorporates offices, shops and restaurants. Several businessmen, notably Tom Romita at Tom's Deli and Mif Kayum of Bengal Sage, have been lobbying for years for the area outside to be improved so they could put out tables and chairs. It means removing the deteriorating cobbled area. They argue that more needs to be done to draw people away from the High Street to the area, including nearby Parchment Street. Currently, St George's Street acts as a barrier to people, so money needs to be spent making it more attractive, they said. A City Council consultation survey has now closed, and council officers will meet Preservation Watchdogs, the City of Winchester Trust, on January the 27th. A council spokesman said, "Once we have all these findings together, we can commission a detailed design with the consultation responses in mind. At that point, we should be able to establish a clearer timeline for works as well." A potential budget of £150,000 has been set aside for the scheme in 2016-17. Councillor James Burns, who's the portfolio holder for the local economy, agrees there is an urgent need for the regeneration of the Casson block, where businesses were struggling with the recent levels in footfall. The concrete block was built in 1962-63 by the well-known architect Sir Hugh Casson. Pevsner's architectural guide described it as excellent in its scale of three stories and in its townscaping, but since then it's fallen out of fashion. Although Michael Carden of the City of Winchester Trust predicts that in forthcoming decades it will return to favour, in much the same way as many of the Victorian monstrosities in our city, which are now cherished. There's been some opposition from environmentalists to revamp, because they fear it will take funding away from improvements to traffic management and pollution. John Beveridge of Winchester Action on Climate Change told councillors in the autumn that improved air quality would enhance the street scene, and that in turn would increase footfall. The Casson Block is home still to the Winchester and District Citizens Advice Bureau. Efforts have been made to improve the area, including the Colour Factory mural in 2008 in the little alleyway that leads through to Parchment Street, and in 2009 the Kite Flyer Archway over Parchment Street itself. In 2013, an independent retailing health check for the city centre, which was positive about retail performance in general, reported that not enough is being done visibly to channel consumers to the independent clusters which can be hidden from view, and that includes the shops and restaurants in the Casson Block.
And this one is headed Doctors Strike Action. Junior doctors in Winchester took part in a 24-hour strike in protest of controversial changes to their working hours and pay. With a picket line of more than 40 doctors, the Royal Hampshire County Hospital was braced for a day of disruption. Passing motorists did their best to show their support in the cold temperature by beeping the crowds. One shouted, "We're all behind you. Good luck." The picket was held until 11 a.m. in Winchester before the doctors moved on to West Quay to protest with Southampton General Hospital staff until 2 p.m. Despite the walkout, emergency departments operated as normal, with junior doctors only providing emergency care from 8 a.m. Tuesday until 8 a.m. Wednesday, followed by a 48-hour stoppage and the provision of emergency care only from 8 a.m. next Tuesday. On Wednesday, February the 10th, there will be a full walkout from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Christina Baker, an obstetrics and gynaecology trainee, has been working at the hospital since August and is one of the main coordinators of the walkout. "We wouldn't have gone on strike if patient care was at risk," she said. "I have organised the picket line here, and we have the support from consultants and even human resources." The strikes have taken place after a breakdown of talks regarding pay and working hours as the government looks to establish a 24/7 NHS. On Monday evening, Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt issued a promise to increase their basic pay by 11%. However, this could see many young doctors worse off, according to Christina. She added, "The 11% increase is really just a smokescreen. It only covers basic pay, and some doctors whose shifts are more unsociable could see their pay decreased by as much as 40%. We have never asked for a pay increase." However, despite the strikes, the hospital was relatively unaffected, with no surgical operations postponed and only three outpatient clinics affected. Donna Green, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Thanks to a tremendous effort from our staff, we were able to carry out most operations and outpatient clinics as planned. We apologise for any inconvenience caused to the small number of patients whose appointments did need to be postponed." Hospital patients Judy Evans, 78, and her husband Martin, 82, are behind the striking doctors. Judy said, "I understand completely why they're striking. Some of the hours they work are very long, and I can only imagine how tiring they can be. My husband has arthritis, so we come here quite a lot, and we see how hard they work." Ex-police officer Martin added, "It is not fair that they've taken advantage of like this. I hope they get the contract they asked for."
Bid to allay floods fear with planning. Winchester's flood defences have been outlined in full to allay fears after catastrophic scenes in the north of England. Tory councillor King Gottlieb sought assurances that the city would be protected from torrential rain, which has devastated northern towns and hit Winchester in 2014. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of the Winchester City Council, said, "While it is oversimplistic to talk of a single flood operations plan for the district, or to believe that the City Council can put any plan into effect in isolation from other agencies, there is a high degree of forward planning to ensure that a coordinated response is made to any event." The city joined with the Environment Agency, Water and Energy Companies, Local Nature Partnership, other councils and small flood action groups in the wake of February 2014's deluge. "The partnership has led to improvements," Councillor Godfrey said, "including a new wall along Water Lane, one of Winchester's worst hit areas. Engineering works at Lower Chiland Bank will provide an extra 70 hectares of flood storage north of Winchester, while extra defences are being planned for the north end of the city centre to protect buildings such as Winchester School of Art. The town's sluices have also been repaired, with a new management plan updated, and the council has bought a portable flood barrier." Councillor Godfrey identified a dozen further plans, schemes and policies addressing flooding across the district. "The City Council is working with County Council, Environment Agency and Southampton University to develop a flood water management scheme around the North Walls Park Avenue area. A public consultation runs online from January the 28th until February the 12th. And there are several pictures reminiscent of the floods in February 2014. There's a picture of lots of water in the aptly named Water Lane in February, slowing and diverting the flow of the Itchen, and then a picture of Park Avenue underwater in February, and then two delightful picture of Guy Blundell and Isaac Whitcomb boating in Park Avenue.
Here's another watery story. Green light to link the county's coast path. Challenges lie ahead in major effort to create the 2,700-mile footpath to go all around the edges of England. It has long been a dream for ramblers, a footpath around the entire coastline of England. Now cash has been approved that will link Hampshire's coast with the rest of England in a 2,700-mile footpath around the entire country. Despite 2015 budget cuts of £20 billion, DEFRA Minister Rory Stewart has confirmed that funding to complete the path will be protected. At the moment, around 65% of England's coast is publicly accessible, both nationally and in Hampshire. But the aim is to make all of England's coastline accessible by foot by 2020. And if that happens, it could mean a massive cash injection for the county. It's estimated that the South West Coast Path, which covers 630 miles from Minehead in Somerset to Poole Harbour in Dorset, generated £436 million for its four counties in 2012 alone. The number of visitors between October 2012 and September 2013 reached 2.8 million. Natural England has started work on the first Hampshire stretch between Chewton Bunny at Highcliffe and Culshot Castle. Now, this section will be 57 miles long and is expected to be ready in 2018. With the starting and finishing points now identified, the next task is to contact landowners. And with as many as 1,500 in this area alone, that is sure to be a challenge. Tom Marshall Lord, Natural England's team leader for Coastal Access South and South East, said, "There are a number of different challenges and a number of private landowners. Our job is to make sure the entire coast is accessible by foot, so we're working on those parts that don't have access." Asked about potential objections, Mr. Marshall Lord said, "We're just starting off and haven't spoken to landowners yet. If our proposals are objected to, then there are a set of procedures we will go through, and after that, the planning inspectorate steps in." There's a photograph of Barton-on-Sea Beach looking east, which is a sort of close-up on a coastal path, showing it moving between the rise of the land and rocks and the sea itself. And there's another one, which is a more distant one, of Leap Beach near Bewley, looking west, which just shows the sandy coast, the sea, and a number of wooden barricades to control the floods as they come in. Other challenges include coastal erosion, and Barton-on-Sea, that I've just described, is an obvious example. Mr. Marshall Lord said, "Our footpath will be along the top of the path, and it will be a safe distance away from the coast itself," adding that agreements with landowners will allow for rerouting in case of erosion. As well as the potential for disappearing pathways, much of Hampshire's coast is crucial nesting ground for birds migrating south. John Durnall, head of estates at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said, "The Trust has a very particular point of view. We don't, in principle, have an objection, but we have some concerns which we're hoping will be addressed. Those areas that are currently inaccessible are most valuable for wildlife. For example, the Bewley, Exbury and Cadland estates. Most of our coastland is of international importance for breeding. Migratory birds winter on our coast, but if they're disturbed, they can really struggle." Aldred Drummond, owner of the Cadland estate, said, "There are places where it's difficult to put the path. There's a lot of sensitive ground and flooding. It is a national nature reserve and there are lots of sites of special scientific interest. And there's a good reason why a national nature reserve exists here. There's a stark difference between beaches that have access and those that don't. We've got to work with Natural England to find an appropriate route. I don't think it will give an economic boost. There are already 350,000 visitors a year to Leap. I suspect that's a government misnomer." A spokesperson for the Ramblers said, "The Ramblers have been the driving force behind the campaign to open up the coast for everyone to enjoy. In 2009, we won the right to walk along the coast and explore our stunning beaches, but development on the ground was slow." Nikki Philpott, Ramblers Director of Advocacy and Engagement, said, "We're delighted that the government has stuck by its commitment. There is huge public love for our coast, and we've been leading the campaign for many years." Speaking in 2015, she said, "It's particularly fitting that this news comes as we celebrate the 15th anniversary of the passage of the Countryside and Rights of Way Act 2000, which gave people rights to walk over mapped areas of open green space in England."
This one is headed "Local Horror Film Thrilling." It was a night to remember for one Hampshire filmmaker. Finn Bruce, 23, showcased his latest venture to friends, family and local business at the Everyman Theatre in Winchester on Monday. The Orsford producer filmed Belly of the Bulldog at his parents' farm at Matalea Estate. The land also used to host the Boomtown Festival every August. The psychological thriller was filmed entirely in Winchester and is mainly based inside a tank whilst hordes of enemies battle to get inside. The film features Rupert Evans, who is currently starring in the popular Amazon Prime drama Man in the High Castle. Michael Smiley, Luther, and April Pearson, Skins. Afterwards, Finn said, "It went really well. I was nervous when presenting it to all the people I knew, but the response was terrific. Everyone said they enjoyed it, and a lot of people were there who would not normally have watched that genre of film. We have definitely created some horror lovers, and I feel privileged to have done that. The film was premiered in Leicester Square at Film 4's Fright Fest. Sorry, that's Fright Fest. But Finn wanted to show it in his hometown as well. He will now look to sell on the rights to the film and hopes to find a buyer either at the Cannes or Berlin film festivals. And here with the article, we have some quite nice photographs in colour showing a lineup of the characters and the director, and also a rather frightening picture of the monster. Here it says underneath, "The monster is revealed."
Night Shelter opens doors to public. Winchester's homeless night shelter is opening its doors later this month to show the public how it supports the city's most vulnerable people. Staff, residents and volunteers at Winchester Church's night shelter will be on hand to talk about homelessness issues. Organisers hope the event on Saturday, January the 23rd, will change residents' perceptions of what the centre is like. Manager Michelle Price said, "We often find that when people are asked to imagine what the night shelter is like, they conjure up an image of large, unfriendly space with rows and rows of beds. The truth is very different. We try to make the night shelter as much like a home as possible, where residents feel safe and comfortable and cared for. The 17-bed facility provides food, accommodation and support 365 days a year. The event runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and includes a pop-up cafe offering free refreshments. For more information, call 01962 862 050. That's 01962 862 050.
Calls for more action to end hunger in the city. Winchester must act to end hunger, the city's leading Labour councillor has said. Hundreds of families in the district rely on volunteers for food, with 1,358 people served by Winchester Basics Bank in the first half of last year. Councillor Janet Berry, Labour Group Leader at Winchester City Council, has urged civic chiefs to join a scheme coordinating local responses. Sustainable Food Cities works with councils, charities, businesses and non-government organisations to help create a supply of affordable, healthy food for everyone. Placing the initiative, imagination and guts of food bank volunteers, Councillor Berry said the city should bid for sustainable food city status and develop a strategy on hunger. She told a meeting last Wednesday evening after the Chronicle had gone to press, "In recent surveys, Winchester has been named as one of the best places to live in the country. At the same time, in the 12 months up to December 2014, Winchester Basics Bank, the food bank with its main outlet situated in the ward that I currently represent, the total number of clients provided with food there rose from 2,936 to 3,032. By encouraging the production and retail of locally grown food, local authorities can play a key role in addressing the lack of access to affordable food in deprived areas. Focusing on food provision could help other areas, including health, climate change and elderly isolation," Councillor Berry added. Her motion was supported by the Liberal Democrat group leader, Councillor Lucille Thompson, and the issue was referred to the council's decision-making cabinet with a report to be prepared in the next few weeks.
New homes plan given green light. Housing plans in Colden Common have been given the green light. Nearly 30 residents objected to two semi-detached houses and seven parking spaces being built in Spring Lane, Colden Common. Residents and parish councillors in the village near Winchester feared the houses built by Abbey Well Developments will block sunlight in Spring Lane and Chestnut Avenue. The plan, which was originally for three houses, was refused on grounds related to loss of light, increase in shadowing effect on 42 Spring Lane. However, the revised plans did not include the house adjacent to number 42. Jonathan Rayner from Chestnut Avenue spoke at the City Council Planning Committee meeting and argued the scheme would lead to loss of light to 4 Chestnut Avenue and 15 Springfield's Close, and said residents conducted a shadowing report, which was only received by planning officers on the day the application was discussed, revealed 2 homes would suffer significant light loss. Also against the plan was Colden Common Parish Councillor Maggie Hill. She also raised concerns the scheme could damage existing infrastructure and accused Abbey Well Developments of not knowing the infrastructure of the site. But councillors at the planning committee fully supported the revised plans and voted unanimously for the scheme. Councillor David McLean said, "I can find nothing wrong with the application, so I will be supporting it."
Crackdown plans for empty homes. Civic chiefs will consider a crackdown on empty homes in Winchester District, which could include tougher rules on idle landlords. More than 100 properties have been empty for over 2 years, and many city councillors see them as an opportunity to provide affordable homes. Some high-profile buildings, including a former crack house opposite the city's railway station on City Road, have been derelict for several years. Councillor Rose Burns raised the issue at Winchester City Council's full meeting at the Guildhall last Wednesday. She said bringing properties back into use can be cost-effective and a sustainable way to increase the supply of housing, which we so badly need. Councillor Caroline Horrell, portfolio holder for housing, promised a report and said the council should be very positive and robust on the issue. She said, "At the moment, we've identified 117 properties that have been empty for more than 2 years in the district. I think we have 5 or 6 powers that are within our control," she added. Former housing portfolio holder Councillor Ian Tate said that despite the council's long-held aims, it had not restored an empty building since he was first elected to the City Council in 1999. He and Councillor Jamie Scott also questioned how the council could afford to employ a dedicated empty homes officer with increasingly tight purse strings. The issue is set to be debated by Cabinet Housing Committee on February the 2nd, with a strategy set to be adopted in April. 6 months ago, the council celebrated figures which showed that it was keeping homes empty between tenancies for an average of 2 weeks in 2014-15, well below the target of 19 days.
Question and answer. My Winchester. Liz Marsden, marketing manager at the Brooks Shopping Centre, tells us her favourite things about Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Oh, favourite eatery at the moment is the Corner House, because it's cosy, welcoming, and the food's delicious. Favourite pub or bar? Oh, bar, I'd have to say is Brasserie Blanc. It's just as inviting to call in for a drink with friends as it is for a meal. It's a great place to go. Favourite shop? Can't pick a favourite shop, as we have such a wonderful selection to choose from in Winchester. Favourite view? I love the view from the High Street along Parchment Street. It's so pretty. Favourite building? If I had to choose one, it would be the Godbegot House in the High Street. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Oh, the fact that you can walk from Winchester to Southampton along the Itchen Navigation Heritage Trail. What's the best thing about Winchester? With a variety of shops, leisure activities on offer, and history to experience, Winchester is just one of those places that has it all. What's the worst? Well, the one-way system. When the city gets busy, it can become a nightmare to get across it. Most overrated thing? Oh, there isn't anything in the city that doesn't deliver what it says. Nothing's overrated for me. Well, if there was one thing you could change about the city, What would it be? Oh, to ease the traffic congestion. OK, describe Winchester in a sentence. It's a friendly and exciting place with lots to explore and discover.
This one is headed, Turnover is on the Rise. The Emmaus project in Winchester has increased its turnover. The community at Bar End provides a home for the homeless men who also work for the charity, which sells donated items such as books and furniture. Its latest newsletter said it generated £65,964 from July, up 37% like-for-like performance. The Emmaus Community Shop in Eastleigh in Lee Road generated £20,937 of revenue since last July, up 17% like-for-like performance.
And that, I'm afraid, concludes our extracts for the week ending 15th of January 2016. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to our readers. Thanks to Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.